Welcome to the B-side of Going Beyond the Bedroom. I'm your host, Natalie, and this space is where we take the conversation a little bit deeper, or sometimes a little quieter. Today's episode is a more intimate offering. It's less structured, more personal, but always grounded in truth. Just a reminder, this is not a substitute for professional therapy. So if something you hear today resonates deeply or stirs something tender, please reach out. Whether it's to me or another therapist in your area, you deserve support that holds you fully.
Welcome to my home and welcome to my B side of Going Beyond the Bedroom. They're being really humble. We're wonderful friends. And I've invited you guys because episode 5 of my Going Beyond the Bedroom podcast is all about breakups, love, divorce, separation, loss, and moving on. And I thought, who better? And if you guys hear noises, because I've got a naughty cat in the background trying to destroy my furniture, who better to talk to than people who have real life experience? So I just wanted to get, first of all, some feedback about from you guys. How long have you been married?
It's actually coming up. 8th of April,
it'd be seven years.
You both know, good, because every time somebody asks me and Phil that question, Phil's my husband, I always have to let him answer because I never know the answer. So 8 years, how has it been?
Seven years going into eight.
Tell me about when you first met.
Well, that was an interesting one. So I was going through a breakup, my previous marriage, and it was my son's confirmation at his church. So a friend of mine, who's a cake maker, made this lovely cake for him. I went to pick up the cake. Wasn't in a particularly good, wasn't a good day for me because of things that were going on at this confirmation that I hadn't been invited to, but that's another story. But I was picking up this cake and the lady just said to me, "Oh, are you seeing anybody?" I went, "No." She goes, "Oh, well, there's a friend of mine who taught me cake decorating, who's a widow, and maybe you two could get together and date." So she effectively set up a blind date with us.
Interesting. Sarah, I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah, no, pretty much the same. Claire messaged me and said, "Are you seeing anybody?" And I wasn't sure how to really answer it at the time. And I was like, "Well, no, go on." And she said, "I've got somebody I'd like you to meet." So I said, "Okay, well, I've got a couple of deal breakers. I won't date a smoker." And she said, "No, he's definitely not a smoker." And she said, "I'd like to give you his details so that he can contact you on Facebook." So I said, "Yeah, okay." She said, "And then we'll invite you around for dinner," which we still haven't had, Claire.
Yeah, Claire, we're holding you to it. You set them up. It's been 8 years, Claire.
Yeah.
We need you to come through with the dinner and make it good.
So she said, "You know, I'd like to, he's going to send you a friend request." So I was like, okay. And I still remember I was actually sat at the kitchen table making sugar flowers for a wedding cake. Mm. And I got the phone request and I thought, yes. And then Trevor messaged me and we carried on messaging all evening. And then he was going out that evening. So he said, "Well, I won't be on Facebook anymore, but here's my mobile number. Mm. You can text me." So I said, okay. So we carried on texting.
Mm.
And that was on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday, again, we'd been messaging and I'd explained I was going to church. And then after church, I'd had a message from Trevor. And I can't think, but he'd said something. And I said, "Oh, I don't know." I said, something to do with my daughters. And I said, "They have a better social life than I do." Mm. And he replied and said, "Oh, perhaps we can do something about that. Are you free on Tuesday?" So we didn't wait for Claire to cook the meal. No, still waiting. No. So we had a blind date, but we'd obviously seen each other's Facebook profile, so we'd seen photographs. Mm. So I knew sort of a little bit of what it at least looked like. So then we had our first date on the Tuesday, 25th of June.
Brilliant. Your memory's really good. That's brilliant. Listen, I'm so intrigued, and I don't know this story, so this is really good. So you kind of were introduced on a Friday, Thursday, Friday.
A Saturday.
On a Saturday.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you talked the whole weekend until Tuesday, until you finally met face-to-face.
Yeah. I think that was an outdoor rock concert, wasn't
it? It was at a concert at the Horse and Groom.
Horse and Groom in Rochford, if anyone knows it. And there was an AC/DC tribute band playing, which is great, but I still managed to find the time to message
Samantha.
And you guys kept talking. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Sam, because you know you had heard, or Trevor, you'd heard that Sam was a widower, or widow, rather. How long had you been a widow, and were you ready to date, both of you, when you got introduced?
It would have been 8 years. I was happy either way.
Okay.
You know, I'd had a few dates, seeing people, that kind of thing. Nothing serious, nothing I was willing to introduce my children to. So nothing serious. I was at the stage where it didn't worry me. I was happy to meet someone, but it didn't worry me if I didn't meet someone.
Cool. I hear that. And you know, you said one of the deal breakers was non-smoker. And when I first met my husband, we met online, he had been a smoker, and it was something I didn't see on his profile. And that was a deal breaker for me. Mm. So it's interesting that we had some similarity there as well. And you guys kind of met online. So another similarity that I hadn't really thought about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my friend Claire probably summed it up with me, that I'm very shy. For people who know me, it's a surprise, I guess, for some people. But I'm not very forthcoming when it comes to women. But it helped that she'd sort of set the ball rolling. But we just hit it off straight away online. So that was
Claire said to me, he's very sociable, he's very chatty, he's a really lovely bloke, but he'll never actually ask you out because he'll never actually pluck up the courage to do it.
But he did. He did ask you out. He said, would you like, let's do something about it.
He hadn't met me then, so I suppose.
Brilliant. Trevor, I'm well proud of you if you said, you know, I'm very, you know, shy around women, but yet still you ask.
Yeah, I'd say most of my life I might have dated girls, normally for quite a long time. I never wanted to flit it in and out of relationships. But it always took me a long time to pluck up the courage to ask someone out. Mm.
Great. And so the two of you are kind of like the perfect recipe for everything that my episode has just been about. Mm. And we're on the B side, you know, having loved and lost in a different way, and then finding love again. Mm. So if you could sum it up, how was your experience? What would you say?
That's a difficult one, really. I suppose my biggest concern with anybody that I met was how that would affect my daughters. Mm. So I was always very conscious of that. And it's not been plain sailing, but it's not been a huge issue. My children were older, it'd been 8 years. Mm-hmm. So they weren't adverse to meeting Trevor, and they quite liked you, didn't they, and what have you.
I never tried to be anything other than your boyfriend.
They've never called him Dad, but funny enough, you do get like birthday cards that will say to Dad, but they don't call him Dad.
Yeah, I look upon them as my daughters. Mm. At first it seemed a bit strange, because my children were much younger. Mm. So, and you'd already been through there, didn't you, having younger children. So there was that moment where I didn't know how to act around them.
That actually was teenage quite girls. Yeah. For me, having been presented with sort of like, I think, say, about a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, I'm trying to think exactly how old they were, probably in that region. I'm like, yeah, been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. Every trick they tried, I was one step ahead. I knew what they were doing. But teenagers, Trevor was like a rabbit in the headlights.
He didn't know what to do with them.
No idea, two teenage girls, what he was doing, really. But obviously I did, so that helped.
It's quite an interesting thing because it's one area that I haven't spoken about in my episode. It's about what do you do when you're blending two families from having, you know, come from different relationships. I have a blended family as well. Our circumstances are different to yours. And we've been very fortunate where the other parents have not been as involved. But it must have been a challenge blending two families. I know it was for Phil and I. How was it blending the two?
It's different challenges. See, for my girls, they'd lost their dad, but they were both very young when they lost their dad. Mm-hmm. So although there was the sense of loss, they didn't have an issue. But so there was no ghost, so to speak, because it was everything was okay. Whereas obviously the other way around with Trevor's children, their mother is still alive. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you've got that extra dynamic there of another parent. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that. Mm. So it's quite different, isn't it? It was quite interesting to see.
I think
the differences between the two.
I'd say that the challenge for, and this is probably for a lot of people, anyone experiencing this may recognise it, is that, see, my children were at home with their mum, and she was in another relationship, actually, a similar sort of time, and they sort of had their own little family group, and they have their rules, and then with us, we had a different set of rules. And my children found that challenging, two sets of rules. Your girls didn't have to do that.
No.
So, and my daughter in particular, I think, struggled with that. She was much younger. And my son though he struggled with it, I think he sort of, I don't know, he got over that hurdle quite quickly. I think he sort of accepted that, well, that's my dad's and Samantha's rules, and this is mum and her her man's rules. But my daughter did struggle with that. But they're both, that's something that I think a lot of people may experience themselves, may actually see that themselves.
And that's a really valuable element. And I thank you for bringing that up, because like I said, it isn't something that we often talk about. Even in therapy, we don't often talk about what happens with the children. Sometimes we do. But if a couple comes to us, either having been through a breakup or a loss, yes, we do talk to the children and we do talk about the family and we do treat the whole family. But generally, we just speak with the people and we don't think about the impact of what happens on the children, on the couple. Mm-hmm. And having lived through, you know, blending a family myself and challenges of children and all of the angst that teenage children come with, it must be, you know, difficult, as you say, with the different rules. And children navigate, and you have to navigate as well.
And also going through the actual divorce, because obviously you're trying to make sure your children are protected from it as much as you can. They still get involved because you get different elements from the courts involved, interviewing and talking to the children. And then they get to this point where, you know, there might be, and this is really the adult thing, not being very adult, but you do, is that suddenly he's like, I'm not happy with this situation, I want to go back to court. We did that. We said that one day in front of my son, and he said, please don't go back to court. That was hard. Sorry, that was hard. That was hard.
Do you want me to cut it?
No, no, no. Okay. It's just really hard, because you realise how much it hurt the kids.
Yeah. And you're trying to navigate your own life and your own hurt and your own difficulties, and you're trying to think of the children all the time. And it's something that we don't think about. We don't think about the loss of, maybe for the children, that element. And I know your girls were very young, but when they look back now as adults, because both your girls are adults, and they have this healthy relationship in front of them, this pattern, this new life. And I'm assuming that maybe, you know, one of your girls was a bit older when dad passed away, so she has bigger memories, more memories. How is it for them now? And how is it for you now, thinking back all these years?
Well, me and my girls were four and six. One of them had just had her fourth birthday and the other one would have been about six and a half. So the four-year-old adapted a lot better because she was younger. The six-year-old struggled, and to some degree still does, because she had a lot more memories and had done a lot more with her dad. But both have been very accepting of Trevor. He's the only person I've ever introduced them to. Both are very accepting of him. I think there was the odd occasion when they used to, my eldest daughter would argue a lot with Trevor's eldest son, because she would kind of say to him, I don't have a dad, and yet you talk to your dad like that, how dare you? You know, she didn't talk to me like that. She wouldn't worry about that, but she, you know, she did used to say to him, you can't, you know, she would really fall out with him over it. But, you know, you kind of try and say he's younger and his experience is very different to yours. But she used to get very upset and very angry with him. How can you do that? You've got a dad and I don't. But fortunately, they've all grown up. Now they're the best of friends. They're all absolutely great together.
It's brilliant when you see your children merge as a blended family, like siblings. I mean, we've had a similar experience where our children, they will fight the world against their other sibling, and then they will fight each other. And I love that. Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, pretty much now.
It's good. It's brilliant. If you could go back and talk to yourself, I don't know, maybe 9 years ago. Let's go 10 years ago,
well,
both of you.
We've been together 12 years.
12 years. Okay, so let's go back 12 years. Does it feel like 10? Trevor, where have you been?
Yeah, the 5 years, just under 5 years. We met in the June, but we got married in the April, so it was just coming up 5 years.
So if you go back 15 years, if you can remember your life 15 years ago, what would you say to yourself 15 years ago, having gone through the experience that you went through, Sam, of losing a partner and, you know, really navigating dating again and introducing someone to your children? What would you say to yourself 15 years ago? I haven't asked these questions before today. No. So it takes some thinking.
I'm trying to think of something really profound.
No, just say something honest. It doesn't have to be profound.
I don't know, really. Probably don't worry about it. Just go with the flow. Enjoy it. If you meet someone, you meet someone. If you don't, you don't. what will be will be.
Mm.
I don't know really, because we never really had any, we never had went through any kind of like split ups or anything like that, mm. or any times when it wasn't really always on that same track, was it? We kind of knew quite early on that we had a future together, and that never really changed, did it? So probably if I was going back to before I met Trevor, it'd probably be like, ignore Claire. Don't listen to Claire, no. It's not like we could have met any sooner.
Yeah.
No,
because Trevor's circumstances were very different.
Mm.
Just to explain, at the time when my husband died in the April, the same year in the May, Trevor's first son was born.
Wow.
So at that time in our lives,
very different.
We could never have met because we was in very different places.
Yes.
His family was just starting.
Yes.
And he obviously went on and had a daughter as well. So he was building his, whereas mine had just fallen apart.
Mm.
So
we've talked about that actually, the contrast. And
yeah.
You know, when that time, the joy that I was experiencing was so different to what you were all going through.
Mm. Mm. So, you know, it's not like really we could have met. So everything's in the timing.
Everything is in I love that. Everything is in timing. Yeah. And we forget that, but it can be so harrowing in the moment.
Yeah.
So harrowing that you sometimes you can't see, you know, I'll be interviewing someone different tomorrow and she'll talk about her experience. And I know one of the things she wouldn't mind me sharing a bit early is that, you know, she made a conscious decision to not be with anyone again after she lost her husband because she couldn't go through that pain again.
Mm-hmm.
But what was, and I mean, you were different ages when you lost your partners anyway, your husbands anyway, but what resilience of you to think, you know, I may not know it now, but I'll get through it one day.
I mean, I said I wouldn't remarry while my youngest daughter was under 18. She was actually just over 17 when we did get married. But because I said I wouldn't have a different name for my children. So anybody I met would have to hang around long enough. She was 17 and I felt, well, she's not a child anymore, but
yeah.
I wanted to have the same name as my children. So I said, I can only marry someone with the same surname as me. I didn't meet anybody with the same surname as me. So, you know, Trevor didn't change his name.
Fair enough.
But no, I, for a long time, said, although I wasn't looking to date, if I had dated, I wouldn't have married or anything like that.
Mm.
But then I suppose the right person, the right circumstances changed that. But my girls were then older.
Yeah.
Trevor was in a position to get married.
Mm.
You know, my daughter was then over 17, so it was a little bit different. I thought she's almost an adult, so we went ahead with it. But for a long time, I did say I wouldn't remarry.
Did you think that you'd remarry, Trevor?
I didn't know. I knew I felt very lonely.
Mm.
It's like weird circumstances, really. I sort of moved in briefly with my parents, because it was all meant to be a temporary breakup. And then I moved in with some friends who really looked after me. I lived with them and I had the upstairs in their flat for a few months. And they were wonderful. They really were good. And then another lady I knew, her and her boyfriend had split up and she had a lovely flat.
Mm.
And she asked me one day if I wanted to rent the flat fully furnished while she could do other things.
Mm.
And so that worked out to timing. I think it was perfect. Mm. So I had this flat. And I got very lonely. And I thought what made it worse, I mean, it's very different to Samantha because you were a single mum and trying to work as well and bring up the children, whereas I'd have my children at weekends and then drop them home and then probably have to get the train back because I didn't have a car. I'd share the car with my ex-wife. And I can still remember, I used to walk into the flat sometimes and all the stuff would be there, or the dinner we'd just had on the Sunday evening. I would burst into tears because it was so hard. No, I wouldn't see my children now for maybe another 2 weeks or something. It really was difficult. So I felt very lonely and I sort of reached out to people. There was a couple of people I used to work with going back 30, 40 years ago. And we used to chit chat and sometimes meet people up. I did date someone. I dated a lady I met through Facebook that I knew her brother from my year at school. And she and I knew each other growing up. And even when we were sort of young teenagers. And we met up and we dated for a few months and she was lovely.
Mm.
We really did. I mean, I think it was, again, it was a seasonal thing.
Mm.
We were good for each other at that time. And it was good for my kids. We sort of went on holiday in the Lake District and had some fun. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
But that happens. lovely lady. Sometimes the chemistry's not there, and it's hard to explain.
It's just not right.
Sometimes chemistry's not right, but still very fond of her. She's a lovely lady. In fact, you met her once. I think you buy something off from like eBay or something. It had to be from this lady, which was fun. I knew I wanted to be in a relationship. Mm. I feel complete in a relationship. Does that? Mm. That doesn't sound weird. You know,
no, it doesn't sound weird. It sounds honest.
I appreciate that people like being on their own. And I had, because though you may not know, I was married before. This is actually my third marriage. Mm. So I've married before. Mm. And, you know, I had there was a hiatus between those two, my first and second marriage, where I was on my own. And I got used to being on my own. Mm. And actually, I think that was where I sort of came down to it. My ego needed knocking down, and it was knocked down. And that's never a bad thing, because you have an ego.
Yeah.
And I think I was a bit of an egoist. I did have a bit of an ego. I was grounded, and I got to know me, and me not in a relationship. There's a big difference between me and a relationship.
There is, and that's something I talk about a lot, you know, giving yourself time to learn who you are again. Yeah. And I suppose you had a bit of time with that, Samantha. It sounds like you had your own time with it.
Yeah.
So when you had your second divorce, yes, you were still trying to know who you were then again, but you had a good experience of that you had an experience of that from before, of learning yourself again.
Yeah.
Really good.
And in hindsight, easy.
It is.
Back. At the time, obviously, tremendously difficult. I mean, I can still remember, it's a long time ago, but I'd have the living in the bungalow, and I would literally get paid, sort out all my bills, work out I had enough money to feed the cats, and then I'd feed myself. Mm. It was literally that bad.
Mm.
I'd had no money. Well, I got through it. Thanks to Sky TV, actually, to be honest.
Lots of binge watching. I can imagine. Yeah. Oh my goodness, it's been such a brilliant conversation. I wonder whether people want more of it. If you could give people some advice, people who maybe are going through a divorce, maybe divorced once, twice, three times, and wonder whether they'll ever have a relationship again, Trevor, for you, and then having found something, what would you say? And Samantha, what about you, having lost a love with the children, with the girls, having to bring Victoria and Charlotte up on your own, and then finding love? What would you say to someone who might be going through the same thing?
Well, I suppose there's always hope. There's always hope. And so with relationships, because one moment you're very loving and close together, and when you break up, there's a lot of bitterness.
Mm.
And it's you always seem to be trying to get one up on the other person. That's one of the things I've learned going through divorces and everything. You're trying to score points, and there's no need to. You don't need, you shouldn't do. And looking back, I wish I hadn't done that, because it hurts you, it hurts the other person. It makes the relationship and the breakup harder and drags it on, and it affects the children and all the rest of the family, my parents, my siblings, it affects everyone.
Mm.
It's easy to say, because it's not easy to actually do, but I would say try not to score points with each other. Try, for the sake of everyone around you, especially your children, just try and do it in an amicable way if you can.
And it's such realistic, solid advice, because you're right. It's almost impossible to do it in the moment, because you're a real person with emotions, and there's so much investment. Yeah. And then it comes to happen, and then you just think, oh, I can see myself doing this, and I can't stop myself. Mm, so it is really.
And I'd flare up. I'd get a letter from a solicitor. I'd flare up. And that's the emotion and fear. A lot of it's fear as well.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, am I ever going to see my children? I'm going to lose my children. Just the fear of the unknown. Samantha was brilliant, because I would get all this stuff through, and it would literally overwhelm me. And you would sit me down and go through it with
me. That's brilliant.
And through it. And
she's missed her calling. She should be a therapist.
And it's possible, because you often find that, and you know, if it be the other way, if Samantha suddenly gets something, and I mean, you don't let that sort of information through, but if Samantha gets something that upsets her, I can be the person that's then the calming influence. I think if one of you has that issue, the other one always seems to step up.
That's it.
It's funny how, and that's how our relationship works. It's normally Samantha stepping up to help me.
I think it's a lot of both. Go, Sam, what about you?
For me, I would say, do it your way. Don't allow somebody else to say, you should be over it by now, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, or you shouldn't be doing this. I fully admit that probably the first couple of years after my husband passed away, my girls must have been in every single club they wanted to be in. Mm. So every single night of the week, I was out. Not for me. I was taking them to gymnastics, to dancing, to, I don't know, whatever they wanted to do. They did everything. And I remember sitting there once in gymnastics and thinking, I actually don't have a free night. And this was a couple of years later. And I thought, this has got to stop because I'm no longer me. I'm just running my, which was great. It kept them occupied. It kept me occupied. And that was what I needed at the time. Mm. But it's no good everybody else saying to me, you've got to stop that. No, that kept me going.
Yep.
That kept me going. And when I got to the point where I thought, yeah, no, it's too much, then I kind of spoke to the kids and said, look, you're doing an awful lot.
Yep.
Can we knock some on the head, you think? And surprisingly, they was like, yeah, we'll stop this and we'll stop that. So I think we were all doing stuff to distract ourselves.
Yes.
But if that is what you need, then do it. Mm-hmm. Don't allow somebody who's not been in that position to tell you how to grieve, how to cope, and how to move on. And I still say that to people now, and people say, oh, you know, I shouldn't be doing this and I shouldn't be doing that. No, sorry, rubbish. You do what you need to do to get through what you need to get through.
That's it.
Until the time is right for you to move on. And even now, you know, like when your dad passed away with your mum, there's no right. If she wants to have a down day, I don't care if it's 18 months, 2 years, she wants a PJ day and she wants to wallow, let her wallow. I mean, I couldn't really wallow.
Yeah.
I had to do the school run. I had to do, you know, there were things I had to do.
The job of two parents.
Yeah.
While trying to hold your own emotions.
Yeah. You know, I had to be mum and dad. Yeah. But do you know what? If my kids weren't there for a day, my parents were very good and my sisters were very good at having looking after my children for me. And I still remember now, there was one of the Harry Potter books that came out. And a friend of ours was queuing up at midnight and he left it on my doorstep. And my mum had the kids for the weekend and I spent the whole weekend reading that book because I didn't want to read on social media or anywhere where else how it finished. And I had that day, I had that weekend. I didn't get many of them, but I had that. So if you want a down day, if you want a PJ day, if you want to spend the day watching movies crying,
Do it. You heard it here.
You heard it
Go here. Go spend the time watching the movies crying.
Because you'll feel better. And then you'll just pick yourself up and you'll carry on. Mm. So there's no right or wrong amount of time for allowing yourself that process. Mm. And then you move on. And it doesn't have to be everything all at once. Mm. I think the last time, I don't cry for my lost husband now. Mm-hmm. But I will cry for what he's missed.
Yes.
My daughter's graduations from college.
Yeah.
You know, I just sat there. And in fact, I was really, really good until I saw somebody else crying and that set me off. And I just think, he's missed that.
Yeah.
It's another milestone. I'll probably be the same as and when and if they get married.
Yeah.
Because I'm no longer crying for my grief.
Yeah.
I'm crying for what he's missed out on.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still have your moments, but it's very different what you're crying for. I'm no longer crying for my loss. I'm crying for his loss.
Yes, all the things that he's lost. It's a strange concept, but I suppose it's true. And there may well be a part of you in there.
Yeah.
You know, you being able to watch him enjoy these moments as well that we don't really recognize because really it's no longer our loss.
Yeah.
It's no longer our hurt.
Yeah.
It's something sort of outside of us, something metaphysical that's beyond us. But it's been absolutely...
We still include him in our family.
That's brilliant.
I think he always has done. And I mean, there aren't so many photos up now, but there are photographs in the house. Mm. The girls have them in the room, and I think the office has got pictures on the wall.
Mm.
And obviously with the kids. And that's always been, and we wouldn't change that. Mm. He's still part of the family.
I'm glad you brought that up because Samantha mentioned the word ghost earlier. And I wanted to ask you, but I wasn't sure if I should ask you about Trevor, whether you've ever felt like you've had a ghost with Alan.
Living with the memory.
Living with the memory of Alan.
I mean, I had that worry about my children more. Mm. The ghost of when I have to see my children. And it sounds very dramatic and whatever. Mm. It's just a fear that you have when you're going through it. Fathers, I think, seem to fear it more than women fear it.
Yeah.
I'm not discrediting that. I'm sure there are women out there who do have or have lost.
They're normally the ones who get the children, normally, not always.
But yeah, absolutely. So I know it can work both ways, but there was this fear, the way it seemed to go. But I don't ever have ghosts per se. I don't think so from the past.
I suppose having the very tangible reminder of him in photographs, and because it was so long before, it's a different kind of feeling, I suppose. And it sounds like you guys have managed it well. How big a role has communication played?
Neither of us have a problem with discussing the past.
No.
Trevor doesn't have any problem. I might suddenly go, well, we was out with friends on Saturday night, who were my friends from my previous marriage that are mm-hmm. still in my life. And we talked at one point about Alan, and you don't have a problem with that. Exactly the same as if we had, Elliot was home recently, it's Mother's Day, she was home to see his mum, and we saw him then. And I'll say, you know, how's your mum? There's no taboo for talking about previous partners with the children, without the children, at all. We've always, you know, I'll always say to them, you know, to the kids, oh, how's your mum? How's work? How's her relationship? Anything like that. How is everything? Mm-hmm. I don't want them to feel we can't talk about it. And Trevor's exactly the same. My girls are welcome to talk about their dad, because you can't do that.
No.
You can't stop kids talking about their other parent, whether they're here or not. So there's never any taboos from that point of view.
I think it's funny because Elliot would come home to see his mum, but she didn't know. It was a surprise on Wednesday. So he came on the Friday and stayed with us. And that was sweet, actually, because he couldn't wait to see his mum. And we were excited for him. And
I was asking him, was your mum surprised? Was your mum surprised? How did it go?
Oh, that's brilliant.
It was a very fleeting visit.
And communication between the two of you, how important has it been over the years? Dumb question, but a good one.
we do talk.
Me more than you, probably.
We have moments. I mean, also, in any relationship with arguments, most of the arguments stem from the children as well.
Yes, I can attest to that. Most of my arguments have been the children.
We love them to bits, but we do sometimes. I get upset about one of the kids or you, and then it starts an argument, whatever. But sometimes we get the chance just to go away for a weekend or just be ourselves on a weekend. I mean, this when the kids aren't there, but it's that blissful peace when they're not there, because then you don't have someone asking you or, you know, taking your. We love their children and we're there for them, but sometimes you just need that release. And
we
that
do
break.
Look forward to our time.
So we have time together and we have such lovely time. We just chit chat and go on walks, or we like running, as you know. So. Or we visit different churches, because if we go away somewhere, we might visit the church locally and
we do enjoy each other's company.
That's brilliant. And I have completely enjoyed your company. And I am so glad that you've come. Thank you so much for saying yes. I know you think I'm mad anyway, but you probably know that I am. I think that's it. Thank you so much. Maybe we'll continue the conversation another time. But thank you.
Thank you.
Always here.
If today's B-side touched something in you, I'd love for you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. You can follow me on social media at LTAS Therapy for more behind-the-scenes reflections and for space to continue the conversations we begin here. Because the best conversations are the ones that we actually have. And of course, if you haven't yet, subscribe to Going Beyond the Bedroom so you don't miss the next full episode or B-side drop. Until next time, be kind to yourself. And as always, dare to go beyond the bedroom.